Blog Talk.
Real sports guys, let's get real. When real guys talk real sports, we will. Ray, Marcus, Gay, Tank, let's get real. These are the kind of guys I need to have in the locker room. The championship type guys. Third guys, you just gotta recognize I gotta pay the money, I gotta keep it. Everybody has an opinion.
They came with so much bravado and so much swagger.
We're not gonna make it. Sometimes you gotta create space where there's no space.
I can't argue with LeBron to do it.
You don't have a game problem with execution, right?
He burned a lot of bridges. He's gonna be hated in Chicago. He's gonna be hated in Cleveland. He's gonna be hated in New York, and that's what I'm excited to see.
Now I blame it on Nintendo. I blame it on the fact that they never played against a team that's gonna be as dominant as this team could be.
The true villain team. The team that everybody wants to smack in the mouth every time they play them.
Well, we got the real sports guys. Welcome to the show. Well, real guys talk real sports. And we started the last couple weeks a two-hour format, and we want to encourage you to join us on the air. Take a seat around the table. You can call 347-989-0844. That's 347-989-0844. This is Dean Wilson. We got Marcus and Ray. We do this every Tuesday night from 10 to midnight, and I'd love to have you as part of this show. We got a lot to talk about. Fellas, I know you're on the air with me. Marcus, you know how we do it. We always go to the post to you and to let you kick us off. So, Marcus, what's on your mind?
Well, you know, we can go a lot of different ways. First thing I want to talk about is, you know, I want to give a round of applause to Mike Vick for stealing that job in Philly. You know, it's been a long road for that brother. You know, he's taken, you know, a lot of it self-inflicted, but he's taken a lot of hits, and, you know, he's finally coming back, and he's looking good. He's looking like a real ball player out there and really bringing it. And, you know, I was wondering if Andy Reid was going to have the guts to give Vic the job, given that, you know, they invested so much in Kevin Cobb and trading McNabb, and feeling comfortable in giving the starting position to Mike Vick. I didn't know if Reed was going to do it. I felt like his job was going to be on the line with this decision. I felt like if he gave it to Cobb and Cobb didn't perform, he was basically writing his own, signing his own pink slip, especially given how Vic showed in the first two games. Now, hopefully Vic can keep it up, and it looks like, yeah, I have every reason to believe he will. I think this is the first time he's had an offensive-minded coach who can game plan around his talents the way Andy Reid can. I think people don't realize that Vic has never really played for an offensive-minded coach or a coach who really knew what to do with what he does or just knew how to game plan offensively in general. He's always kind of played for defensive-minded coaches. Dan Reeves was the last coach that seemed like they knew how to utilize his skill set. So, you know, that's the first thing I want to say. I just want to give a round of applause to him. You know, it was tough watching him go through everything he went through because it was so self-inflicted. But it's good to see him return to a position where he can be a starting quarterback, and seems like he's humbled, which is always, you know, an important thing, you know. Seems like he's humbled, and he understands now his job as a quarterback, and he doesn't take for granted the opportunity. And it's good to see somebody learn that lesson. Hopefully he's learned that lesson. It appears that he's learned that lesson. So it's always good to see that when somebody can go through a tough time and come out on the other side haven't learned a lesson from it.
Well, and I think that, you know, what's good about it is, you know, because I was, you know, people who play football, is football is about outcomes and production, as much as sports is about that. And as a coach, at some point you just have to decide, guy, just playing. I know you got a future you got to think about. You got a young quarterback to think about. But when you have a player like Michael Vick and the way he played over these last, whatever, five or six quarters, you know, you can tell when a guy's got it and your opportunity to win. You got so many young guys. It's kind of like the decision, you know, Michigan made to go with Denard. When you have something, you have to have an X factor. When you're trying to figure out and develop a personality for your team, you got to have somebody when everything breaks down can make a play. And he's proved he can still do that. But he also proved that he can be in the pocket and really work from the pocket, which I think is surprising everybody. I think that, like you said, that's a trip to him just coming back, learning, paying attention to detail, staying. You know, I think you see a person that's a little bit more serious about studying and the craft of quarterbacking. And that could be a dangerous combination because, you know, he was in jail, but he was resting his legs. So he wasn't getting a wear and tear, and he wasn't getting banged with that much last year. So this is a cat that's really been rested and is kind of coming back. So
I know he might have been doing a little bit of running around that cell.
Yeah, he could have been, but Mike's a big cat. I know they ain't really walking up on Mike like that.
They was going to test that 4.3 speed.
I think that he was fortunate to get the opportunity. I think the concussion of Cole, you know, gave him the opportunity to get back out on the field. But, you know, I think the real story is behind football, you know, behind the scenes and how much he's matured as a man and how much he put on his shoulders and brought himself out of the abyss that he was in. You know, he was truly a hated man a few years ago. And you know, he made amends to that. I mean, he did the things that most, you know, I think I should say I would be afraid that most people wouldn't have gone as far as he did to redeem himself. I mean, this man is now a spokesman for the Humane Society. I read an article the other day about, you know, the dogs that were involved and how they were rehabilitated and how much money he spent, you know, to bring them back around. And if Mike Vick wasn't a changed man, he wouldn't have been out on that football field this weekend or last. So
that's right.
He's brought himself. He's matured as a person and has changed, you know, some of his ways. I know he was in that altercation this summer, you know, where they, you know, talked about, you know, did Philly make a big mistake, blah blah blah, you know, and then it proved later that he wasn't even in the club. You know, his own birthday party turned into an incident, but fortunately for him, he wasn't there. He wasn't a part of it, and then nobody could pin any bad repercussions on him if he wasn't there. So you know, I think it's as much a testament to the fact that he's a great football player. You know, the things that he's done in the last, like you say, six quarters, you know, he should have beat a Detroit team. You know, even this Michael Vick should beat a Detroit team. He has that kind of talent. But what he did to Green Bay and that defense that they're playing, it's kind of scary that this kind of talent has been on the shelf for you know, so long.
Man, I tell you what. When he got knocked out of that Green Bay game, when Carl got knocked out of the Green Bay game, and Mike Vick stepped on that field, man, Dom Capers and Mike McCarthy probably pissed on themselves.
Right.
Because
exactly.
That's the guy that you want, that's the type of player and type of athlete that you do not want to see unprepared. You know,
right.
Football is all about preparation, and it's all about routine, and, you know, this happens, and we're going to do this and this and this, and mapping out all the possible scenarios that could play out, and then you get the wild card of all wild cards shows up, and you have no clue. You had no time to game plan. It's like, oh hell no, what are we gonna do with the dude now? You know, so it was good to see that. And as just as much, I think, in this country, in this culture, as we're quick to rip people down, like, we love tearing down our stars. You know, we love ripping down our heroes. I think we also just as much enjoy that comeback story. And this is another one of those comeback stories. And it also brings me to another thing that I was checking out over the weekend. Looking at this, there was a story about LeBron and his Q score, speaking of tearing down stars. You know, again, but this was another self-inflicted wound. You know, looking at LeBron and he's talking about these Q scores. And for those of you that aren't aware, and again, I'm probably going to do a terrible job of explaining this because I really don't understand it that much myself, but I kind of have a general, like, basic, like, dude on the street corner understanding of what a Q score is. So I'm going to break it down for you real quick. A Q score is basically, there's this company that does this, basically how marketable, how likable you are in the public eye, and they look at, you know, entertainers, musicians, and athletes, and kind of use this as a gauge of, you know, how popular they are in the public eye. And so with this, LeBron's Q score, of course, dropped after the decision and everything that went on this summer with him taking his talents to South Beach, as he says. So his Q score drops, and, you know, but in the article it talked about the athletes that he was behind. It was Mike Vick, Kobe, Tiger, T.O., Ocho Cinco, and all these are all the guys that he's behind in the Q score rating. So he's the sixth most hated athlete, and these are the five guys ahead of him. And, you know, the author of the article was insightful enough to point out the fact that how the hell did Ben Roethlisberger not beat any of those dudes, given that Kobe hasn't done nothing in about 5 years? I mean, you know what I mean? And none of them have done anything on the level of a Ben Roethlisberger. So it got me to thinking about, like, you know, me being me, you know, putting on my militant hat. I'm like, hold on. All these dudes is black. Ain't no way. Roger Clemens couldn't make this list. You know what I'm saying? Mark McGuire couldn't make this list. Hell, Rafael Palmeiro couldn't make this list. You know, where they score at, you know? So it was just interesting to see that, you know, the top five athletes were all African-American, even though, you know, there's some white athletes whose name is Mud right now and should be Mud right now, but they're not.
Well,
I want to throw that out there to y'all.
Yeah, what's interesting, the first time I heard that, I was actually listening to, you know, another show, because I'm a sports talk shows in general, and hopefully other sports shows, talk show hosts are listening to what we talk about. But I heard Doug Gottlieb, he read the list, and he hadn't even thought about it the first time, but when he read the list, he paused on the show. He said, did anybody think what I just thought about this list? And he went into, you know, did everybody realize everybody on the list is African-American? And what does that say about how he coined it? I love the term, our inner racism. Right? What is it that doesn't have Roger Clemens and Ben Roethlisberger and folks like that on that list? And I think, you know, that's something that we really need to really think about, is that how do – because we tear athletes down and build them up, but there is a difference in how we project that. Like – Ocho Cinco, what has Ocho Cinco done to be on that list?
Hell yeah. Really? I mean, what has he done?
He's never been arrested, never really been in an altercation, only just talked. So how does just talking get you on a list like that?
Right, right. Well, Roger Clemens is about to be indicted for lying to a federal judge.
He's not about to be indicted. Roger Clemens is about to be incarcerated. That's different. Indicted means you have a half a chance of going home. Roger Clemens is going to be incarcerated. I think what we're missing about this is the fact that the Q score is for marketability, and there's probably several players and former players that are not going to be on this list because you aren't really going to buy much from them anyway. You know, I'm not going to buy a set of tires because Ben Roethlisberger says that they're good tires. But Ben Roethlisberger is also not out there trying to sell tires.
I dig that, but where's Brett Favre? Where's Favre?
Exactly.
Favre is selling some of everything.
But is he selling anything –
big, you know.
That man be saying, he be trying to say, hey, did you see him throw that interception in that Wranglers commercial? He throwing picks in commercials.
Yeah, and what I heard about this is more, it's really about a likability. So when the guy tried to explain it, he said that you could still be likable, but then you could be less likable in how far you drop. And so he was trying to explain that somehow you could be on both ends of the score. I couldn't quite follow him. But that, you know, with as many stars, and you think about it, that is a crazy list. Because, you know, when I'm looking at that list, I'm thinking,
I think what's happening with this list is that, you know, I'll say it like Notre Dame. You either love them or you hate them, but you know the name. You know who to think of. You either love him or you hate him. You know, but he's as popular as ever. You know, he has a reality show. T.O. has a reality show. You know, they're as popular as ever. But you may not like him.
I would say Favre and Roethlisberger are that same thing. You love
him. Yeah, and I get that, Ray. I totally get what you're saying. But Kobe ain't done nothing in 5 years. And this man is ahead of somebody who recently almost caught a charge in Ben Roethlisberger. You know what I'm saying? Like, Ben Roethlisberger is not playing right now because of something that recently happened. And he's an asshole. Ben Roethlisberger is a jerk.
Sure, but Ben Roethlisberger didn't go to trial either. Kobe had to go to... They had enough evidence with Kobe to go to trial. Then they determined he was just a dirty man.
That's because Kobe wasn't smart enough to go out and kick it with troopers. See, that's his problem.
Exactly.
Kobe needs to stop being a loner and start getting some troopers in his entourage, and none of this would have went down that way. They would have confiscated the tapes. They would have told old girl to shut up. They would have took some pictures, you know, and signed some autographs, and Kobe would have been out. He would have been scot-free. See, that's where Ben has got it figured out. See, Ben got the state troopers demographic on lock. He got the state troopers in his back pocket. And so that's why ain't nobody going to mess with Ben. You know, I think, you know, because Ben is kind of gully. He came at a Goodell like nobody's business. Like, yo, y'all going to reduce this to 2 games. You know what I mean? He had the balls to even put that out there that, yeah, we going to go in there and ask for it to be reduced to 2 games. Goodell don't play that.
But again, I think going back to what Devon said about the inner racism and about realizing that, you know, how we market and how we sell our wares in this country, you'll see that it, you know, doesn't necessarily have to be the best player. You know, how many Larry Bird jerseys were sold? You know, how many Brett Favre jerseys do you see out there? You know, as you know, compared to any other quarterback of that caliber. You know, it was my argument with why they signed, you know, Braun in Milwaukee, but they haven't signed, you know, Prince.
Yeah.
You know, because in Milwaukee, there are going to be more kids in those stands buying those jerseys that look more like Braun than like Prince.
Now, I dig that. I dig that. I mean, it is kind of a open commentary on kind of our social perceptions of why we like what we like and who we like. Cause, yeah, I peeped that too with Braun and Prince. It's like, you know, I get Braun plays better in Wisconsin than Prince will. So you lock him up long term because that's if you want a face for your franchise in the state of Wisconsin, you want it to look like Ryan Braun.
Right. You know, that's you're not going to offend anyone in Sheboygan. If Prince happens to leave via free agency because you couldn't afford to keep him, but you might have been somebody in Sheboygan if they let Braun go. How did you let him?
Now here's a question: has that mode of operating hurt baseball? because you don't have a Prince Fielder or those kind of guys being the face of your franchise. You don't have kids that look like Prince Fielder trying to play baseball. And that's something that baseball has talked a lot about, is trying to get African-American kids, inner-city African-American kids,
right,
to play, more kids playing baseball. And maybe because baseball, you know, is afraid to put that face out there and put that face in front of their franchise, that's why they're not getting those kids.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I think that we have to think about, you know, and I think the Q score is helping us really think about it, that there's a subtext to a lot of this stuff that we do. And there's that, you know, Favre, for a lot of people who might have participated in this survey, is like the guy around the corner at the bar. He's a guy I know. You know, Ocho Cinco is this rich guy that's making a lot of money and acting crazy, because he ain't the guy I know. And that's part of that, you know, that kind of subtext of race and sports.
Margaret, you still there?
Well, I think we're back there. We had a little technical difficulty here, but we're back. Everybody back?
Yeah, I'm back in.
Okay. I think Ray's trying to get back on. Work with the technology. We have 2 hours to get this all together. I was making some beautiful points. I realized I wasn't there.
Hey, Ray, you back?
I said, I'm a rhythm. No feedback. I said, I'm making some crazy points here, and they're not even catching it. I look it up. I said, there's nobody there. This was Hall of Fame type material that I'm delivering. And all it was like.
We had
like,
to go through the tape.
It was like nothing but birds and we're like out in the meadow. There's nobody home.
Yeah.
we're back bigger and better than ever, you know, working through all this stuff. I'm gonna let y'all go a little bit. I'm gonna try to also maybe call it on a different line to keep a stronger connection. So I will do that, but I'll let y'all go. Marcus, make your point. Anybody, you there? That Ray, did we just lose Marcus, huh? We just lost
Marcus. No, I'm still here. I'm still here.
Oh, you said that? Okay, we got you. All right, we're all
here.
Yeah,
there. I'm still here.
All good. All right. So where were we again? We were talking about let's regroup us and get us back on track. So we're making our point about kind of race and sports subtext that kind of drives a lot of these scores. Is it something we put – the point I was making is about – the kinds of things, if you look at a player like Vic we just talked about and the way that he gets portrayed versus how Steve Young did, you know, who was also a running quarterback before he up.
Hello?
Like there, that's there that we don't want to acknowledge. And I think that's an important part of healing and moving forward. I mean, I think you know, definitely the quarterback position looks much different now in the NFL than it did, you know, 15 years ago. But, you know, it does talk about when you see scores like this, you say, okay, what's the projection of this? Why is this so equally deserving white players and who are as annoying? If you can't be annoyed by Favre, I know a lot of Favre fans, but Favre is annoying. I mean, and his polarizing figure, he doesn't end up in there. Now, Roethlisberger is definitely can be, and I'm a Steeler fan, is a polarizing figure. And Clemens is one of the most polarizing figures you can say here. You know, he making Bonds like a choir boy. I mean, nobody's talking about Bonds anymore because Clemens got the spotlight, yet he's not even number five. So that's, people just have to say that something's wrong with that. That'll make a lot of sense. And what's the subtext that creates that?
Yeah, you know, I think it's just it's good old. I mean, that's it's as American as apple pie, as they say. It's just who we are, man. I think it's really a part of this country, the history of this country, socially, you know, culturally. It's just who we are, and you know, I noticed it when I was in high school, and people would talk about how I played compared to how one of my white teammates played. Where, you know, the white kid is always heady and gutsy, and he's a smart ball player. Where me, I'm always naturally gifted and athletic.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got all this natural athleticism, you know. And even when I was at Beloit, how they used to talk about our teams, because, you know, we had a team that was one of, we had a blacker team compared to the other teams in the conference at the time. And, you know, they would say Sifu's teams have a ton of talent, but they're undisciplined. Like, how do you know? Were you at practice last week? How do you know we're undisciplined? You know, but it's assumed that, you know, there's certain characteristics that are instantly going to be ascribed to a white athlete as opposed to a black athlete. And that's the default that we go to. And people have to really do some mental legwork to get around that. And a lot of people aren't up to that challenge.
I agree.
You know, because it's such an easy fix. You know, you can talk about, well, we'll talk about you, for instance, Marcus. If anybody had an opportunity to watch you practice, if anybody had an opportunity to watch how hard you worked in practice, nobody would have said that you had a lot of natural ability. It was a lot of hard work that went into that ability.
Right.
You know, I personally would marvel at the fact that I never saw you lose a wind sprint. And I still remember that to this day, watching you practice, how, you know, you would never lose a wind sprint. And I thought, you know, that that's not just natural ability. That's a lot of desire. That's a lot of hard work. That's a lot of conditioning. Now, you know,
hated losing. I just didn't like losing.
Exactly. but again, you know, but that was that mindset. That was that mindset. You know, were there a couple of white dudes on that team that could have you know, conditioned themselves better? Of course there were. But had they worked as hard for as long as you had, then it might have been a possibility. But by the time you get to that level, if you haven't worked that hard, it's you're not going to get there. You know, natural ability is not going to carry you. It didn't carry you to that level. There was a lot of hard work that went into getting to that point. And that's what a lot of, you know, but again, we go back to the idea that when you talk about sports and you talk about athletics, only a few people have played.
Yeah.
Only a few people have played. So if you've played, you realize that, you know, it's just a stereotype. You know, go to a club. All black men can't dance, you know.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true. I've seen it. I've seen it firsthand. Now, I'm not talking about me. I can cut a rug. But I've seen it play out on several occasions. When somebody tries to meet that expectation, and it doesn't go the way they want it to.
It's that mindset, you know. You know, people think that Michael Vick cannot be a pocket passer. Simply because, you know, he's a black man and he's going to run. Well, he's going to run when he has to. And it took a lot of hard work, not natural ability, to get to that point. He's a runner. He runs. He's a fast man. He has quick feet. It's an it's an attribute. It's not a downfall. He's going to get a chance to start again this week, you know. Not based on anything that was natural. He just outplays Cole, and Andy Reid has to win ball game. You know, this the cue list is. I'd like to know how they got their information and where they're getting it from, because names that have been left off that list. If this is about marketability, there are some people you're not going to go to sell wares, and I don't think a lot of people are going to call Roger Clemens to sell anything. So
not right now.
Exactly. So there has to be a bit of popularity involved with that, you know, and whose name comes up, and how this all plays out. They're not asking Mark McGwire to sell anything, but he should have somehow been on this list. They're not asking Roger Clemens to sell anything right now, but he should have somehow been on this list.
So yeah, you know, the whole Q score thing is real interesting, and it's a real interesting idea and topic, and you know, we could probably talk about it for another hour or so. But what I do want to do, I want to move into let's talk about this past weekend in football. You know, we picked some NFL games last week, and we picked four games that we kind of highlighted for the coming week. You know, and we all took our picks. You know, we had the Ravens and the Bengals, the Steelers versus the Titans, the Patriots and the Jets, and the Giants and the Colts. And you know, let's first go to this Ravens Bengals game. Y'all guys still there?
Yeah, we still here.
Okay. Is the bar still on?
Did
we lose the bar? I think we lost him. I got the switchboard up, so if you come back, I'll plug him through.
There you go. I think he's having phone problems.
Yeah, I think he is. So we had the games from so we had the Ravens and the Bengals, and, you know, we all picked the Ravens to win this game. And I don't know about you, but, you know, I was expecting the Ravens to be able to defensively assert their will against that that Bengals team that just didn't look like they didn't show much in the first week, which is why the first week can always be a deceiving thing. But the Bengals just didn't pass the eyeball test in week one. When you watched them play, they just didn't look like they were in sync. And they still weren't very much in sync offensively. But, you know, Ravens, the part of the Bengals that really stepped up was their defense. The defense plus the Flacco. And, you know, Flacco got a lot of hype this preseason. People talking about the weapons that he's got. And he looks, I mean, people talk about Sanchez, and I talk about Sanchez. I talked about Sanchez last week, calling him saying check down, because he was saying check down in week one. But Flacco, I mean, people were talking about the Ravens going to the Super Bowl. Flacco doesn't look like a Super Bowl quarterback right now. You know, people got on Sanchez and how poorly he looked. Flacco didn't really look that great against the Bengals.
I think that when you saw what Flacco did to the Jets and the defense that they have and they brought to the table, I just automatically assumed that if he could play that well against the Jets, he would play much better against the Bengals, and he just didn't. I mean, the way that he exploited the secondary and Cromartie in that game one that they played, I automatically assumed that they would just whoop up on the Bengals. I didn't think their defense would hold up, would stiffen up well enough.
Yeah, I agree. Real quick, I'm going to welcome Devon back into the conversation. You back with us,
I'm out here in outer space, boy, going in and out, so I had to come in through another line to make this thing work.
Okay.
But I'm glad I came in.
We got you on.
Point that I was, I was really trying to figure out whether or not Flacco was ready to step up. And he hasn't come under a lot of heat. At least you don't see it in the national spotlight. He kind of he's a weird cat that's kind of got some love without a lot of production in the way that I would think it is. And it's been surprising that if he were in a, if he were in a bigger market, how much scrutiny he might come under. I don't know if that's just the product of being in Baltimore or whatever, but this can get more passes. What year is he in right now?
He's in his third.
Year. And he should be carrying an offense a little bit farther than he is. So it's going to be interesting to see how people view him, if he's viewed as the weak link, the guy that can't lift up and make plays. He's got some receivers. So I think
he's got the weapons.
He's got some weapons.
That's the other side of it, though, too. I think that Baltimore has to pull back and realize that they are a run-first offense. With the talent that they have in the backfield, they shouldn't be trying to exploit Flacco the way that they have been. He has the receivers, and there's a time to pass, but that is a run-first offense, and they need to establish it and establish it hard and to give him an opportunity. He's not the best quarterback in the world. You could say he's a lot like Palmer, and he's in a similar situation. He's got some great receivers now, and he needs to be able to get the ball to them. But that is a run-first offense, and if they don't get that established, he's not that hard to pick apart.
But the thing about Ray, you bring up a good point, touching base with Palmer, because that's another part of this game I want to get into. And maybe you guys can shed some light on this. What happened with Palmer? I mean, he was at what point? He was like, it was like Manning, Breeze, and Palmer was like a distant third. And now he doesn't even look like the same quarterback, man.
Right. Well, I think that the NFL does that to you. I mean, these quarterbacks that come in and they continually get better. They're getting it. They understand that the game is at a speed that's, greater than whatever they saw in college. And some quarterbacks never evolve. They never get there. And I think that's what's happened to Palmer. He looked good for a while. But, other quarterbacks step up and look good around him. When he came out, he was a decent quarterback. And he's still about at the same level. He just hasn't progressed.
Does that say something about them USC boys, or is that just is that just my USC hate coming into play?
Yeah. Well, it could be a little of both, you know. But again, the Cincinnati is one of those teams. They need to establish the run. Palmer's not going to flower. He's not going to produce. If they don't establish the run, if Benson can't get out there and you know, crack off a few, you know, first downs for him, if all they have to do is worry about Palmer, as good as the receiving corps is, they're going to get beat.
Yeah, I think that Palmer, Cincinnati hasn't had a consistent running game and hasn't, up until now, had a good defense. So even when he was
Johnson. Well, they had a consistent running game. Don't forget about Rudy Johnson. Rudy Johnson was a monster during Carson's first couple of years.
Yeah, but they
had a running game.
They didn't really commit the way they did it to the run. They used him, and he benefited on that running game. But I think it was a lot like early years of Manning. You know, Edgerrin James and all the, you know, there was that running game,
right.
But it was secondary thought. Like, we really
want
to you're going to get yours. And when you touch it, you better score. Versus the kind of attack they had with Benson last year that was clearly, we're going to give some dedicated carries to it. And then having that defense that could stop it. And then I think, you know, Ocho had some years where he wasn't really focused. So I think, you know, I think it was a combination of, but I don't, you know, I still don't know why Palmer isn't where he needs to be. And I don't, he's the one USC cat I still like. And I don't try to have that bias with him, but I think I'm not trying to get a lot of hype.
The only one I mess with is Polamalu, because he's a monster.
Yeah.
Polamalu plays
right.
ball.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
Polamalu play ball. The rest of them dudes, go hang out with Snoop.
Well, you know I did well with them picks last week, so I just want to say that. So
So we all picked the Ravens in that game, and we obviously were wrong. You know, it was unexpected. I think anybody in their right mind would have picked the Ravens, so I ain't even mad about that one. The next game we picked, you know, me and Ray went to the Steelers and the Titans. Me and Ray took the Titans. You know, they were coming off a solid win where they looked good in week one, and Devon took the Steelers. And,
might
have
been the pick of the week,
y'all. Yeah. It was. It might have been the pick of the week.
Sure. You know, there's no way that I thought Chris Johnson was going to run for 39 yards. I mean,
hey, that Steelers defense is back, man. Polamalu is the difference maker.
I think he had like 1,200 yard games in a row. And I think what happens with Tennessee when you can do that, you know, they're like the Cavaliers. You know, they like to stand there and watch that guy run. And he's not running, they don't know what to do, you know. You know, when LeBron wasn't scoring, the Cavaliers stood around and watched. You know? They didn't know what to do.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's part of it, but I think what we're seeing is, and I think we forgot last year because Polamalu was hurt for the majority of the year. But remember, that Steelers defense the year before, no, hardly anybody got 100 yards on that defense rushing. You couldn't run on that defense the year before when Polamalu was healthy. And I think that's more a testament to the Steelers than it is the fault of the Titans. You know, I don't think very many people are going to get 100 yards on the Steelers running this year. Even CJ2K, you know, you see they held them to 42 yards. I think that Steelers defense is just really, really locked in right now. Props to Mike Tomlin because he was one of my favorite coaches in the league. He gets it done. Like, I'd play for Mike Tomlin if I had the talent.
And I didn't think that the Steelers offense was ready to, you know, score points. You know, I just didn't. I thought that they would.
I think
the defense would be on the field a lot.
Well, I think you know, as somebody who's watched the Steelers for years, even on the Coward, they had these years where they thought they were Air Coryell, and you knew the next year they're going to come back and focus on being, you know, having Steelers football. And last year, for some reason, they got drunk with this idea of we're gonna air it out with Ben. And, you know, championship teams have an identity. Steelers have always had that identity. You know, quarterback can make them plays when they need to make the plays, but we're going to run the football and play good defense. And I think Ben's suspension is good. They're good for trying to get back to those basics. You know, the question is how they're going to incorporate, you know, having Ben back and how much are you going to open it up versus how much you want to play this style. And that's something they're going to have to determine. But they can't go as far across the continuum to the place where they were, throwing all the time. You know, that hurt the defense a lot as well last year, especially when Polamalu wasn't out. So I think that's the part that we need to really focus on.
Yeah, well, they're going to have to run the ball this week because who they got quarterback at? Cordell Stewart? Is he quarterbacking this week?
I don't know where they're going to go. They're going to have to, you know, they trying to see if Leftwich is healthy. They gonna have.
Man, even when Leftwich is healthy, he's slow as a slug, man.
they gonna have.
I mean, he was faster when he broke his leg at Marshall and O-lineman carried him. That was as fast as that boy ever moved.
We didn't need him to sling when he can sling. Just get back to 3 or 4 or 5 yards and plant that foot and hit somebody. You know, but they'll figure – that's the thing about it. They'll figure out how to play. You know, they got you some gimmicks, whatever they need to do. That's that old school steal away. We're going to figure out how to get the end zone.
Hines
good quarterback. You can go back to my old school. You know, you might see the Wildcat with Hines.
Man, they're going to bring back the Aces one to Charlie Batch.
Yeah, that's what they're looking at.
Charlie Batch is the backup. He is the backup. Like, yeah. Even if he ain't on your team, you think Charlie Batch is the backup quarterback for your quarterback.
But you know he always good for 1 or 2 games. I said with this that they would go 3-1 because I thought one of these first two games they might lose, but they won. You know, and they got what? Who they got next? Tampa. Who they got next?
Yeah.
So I mean, they're looking. You know, they're looking pretty good if they can. You know, to go 3-0. I mean, Tampa. And I'd be interested to, you know, go down those teams that are 2-0 and those teams that are 0-2 and, you know, which one.
Yeah, we're going to get in there. Don't give away too much of the show too soon, Eddie.
We got another
hour 15 to fill.
Well, you know when I got dipped off a little bit, I got lost out there in Spaceland, Radio Spaceland.
Right.
I might have missed a lot of that.
Devon got lost on the internet.
I got lost on the internet. I was
he opening all types of windows.
Oh, he
on Amazon. Nah, that ain't it. They ain't in there. They ain't on Amazon. He opened up a porn site. Nah, they ain't in there either.
Yeah. I was all over there in Overstock. I was just like, where everybody go? So
yes,
I might have missed that point. But
go through a Star Wars website.
I get one every day because I didn't know. I went with my gut. In my heart on that pick, so I can't take too much credit.
So you won up on us with that one, but I break even on the next one. We got the Patriots and the Jets, and you two guys went with the Patriots, and I told y'all the Jets wasn't going to lose two games at home. You know, now Sanchez, you know, Sanchez down as I like to call him when he messes up, he made me eat that name. They finally opened up the offense for him, and, you know, you had the Revis and Randy sub-drama going. As far as I'm concerned, Randy won that battle. Y'all may think differently, but if a man make you, if you got to run so fast and you pull your hamstring, I got you.
Well, I
made you pull your hamstring trying to keep up with me, and I caught it one-handed.
I chose that game the same way that I chose that Ravens game, you know, the idea that if Flacco could exploit that defense the way that he did the week before, that I thought Brady would just exploit it even worse, and it didn't happen that way. But you know, Revis, when did he leave the second quarter?
Yeah, yep.
Marty.
You know, and they couldn't put, you know, enough together to play. New England's running game is terrible.
I didn't know New England was as soft as wet noodles as they are. They just straight soft. And now,
they are. And that's Belichick's fault. That's Belichick's fault. Because Belichick will not keep a running back.
Yeah.
He will not commit to anybody.
Well, that's kind of their owner's fault too. You know, they don't really go out and try to get a whole lot. You know, they like that white label, you know, canned good stuff. You know, that generic. You know, they don't
just say peas on the front. Don't say Jolly Green Giant. Just say peas on the front.
You know, they'll get, like, you know, they got when they got Corey Dillon, you know, he was on the downside of his career. Now they got the ageless wonder, you know, and they just act like they can beat you with anybody they pick up. That's Belichick, you know. He's worse than Shanahan, you know.
Hey, one thing I will say is that in that game, we talked about Cromartie subbing in for Revis. Cromartie locked Randy down.
Oh, he did.
Yeah.
Cromartie did a job on Randy. Cromartie balled.
After he caught his 150th or his 200th touchdown. And Randy was, you know, he was.
I think it was 150.
Yeah,
150. Yeah.
You know,
he made Revis pull his hamstring and took the rest of the day off.
Right. Yeah.
That's Cromartie was. Well, Cromartie was all on him, like he was a groupie.
Yeah, but I'm looking at Randy. And Randy, and what I think about Randy is like football version of Clyde Drexler. All you know is he got a right hand, and he still beat you. No left. Randy runs three routes. You know he running about three routes. He ain't coming across the middle. He ain't really trying to do no curl in. He ain't really getting in harm's way. So you know he got about three routes he's going to run, but he like Drexler. You know he only going to go right, but he's going to stay anyway, no matter what. But that's it. And Cromartie figured out how to, you know, he stayed on top of him a little bit. But, you know, the Jets, they got to prove it because Sanchez got to know. And then plus he's got Edwards, who's got that, you know, he's got that DUI. So,
which is dumb.
So we don't know, you know, where he's going to be.
The owner got a cab service set up for these cats.
Yeah.
For this exact situation. The owner got a cab service set up for these morons. For this exact situation. And this goofy. Man, I tell you that. Michigan education.
You don't blame it on that. You see, the thing about it, he was like, why aren't you giving me a test? In Michigan, they give us a test. Like, giving away, like, you got trouble. How you going to know they did that in Michigan unless it happened before? You know, I was like, damn, they falling out in the diag. They falling out in the diag right now up there in Ann Arbor. You know, he's killing me. And you know, Joe Namath is killing me. You know,
He was probably hanging out with Willie Joe. They had, he met Willie Joe at the pub. You know, they got it in for a couple of hours, and, you know, Willie was like, hey, I'm finna go fire Aaron Andrews. What you on?
Yeah, Willie not really tweeting. He got a young co that somebody tweeting for him, but he just telling him what to tweet. But he ain't really tweeting, but he's been talking about Edwards the whole. Now there's one more thing he gonna talk about. I just can't understand it. But Sanchez got to put two games together for me. I'm not gonna buy the Kool-Aid.
He's not gonna put two games together.
He got to put some games together right now. Because he can't.
It's not going to happen.
They're going to be like stock going up and down every week. You know,
that's what the season is going to be. This season is going to be for them. He may play well at home. He's going to play poorly on the road. When it get cold, his Latino going to come out. He ain't going to be playing well then because he ain't built for that.
Okay.
His inner Latino going to come out. He's going to start dropping the ball on the ground because it's too cold. He from California.
Sound like Mary was it now.
So that's that game. So I picked the Jets. So I got one up on y'all on that one. So me and Devon are even. Ray is still an over right now.
but everybody
picked up one picking the.
Before we leave the Jets though, you gotta remember that this win did not negate. You know, that loss that they had in week one. It didn't nullify it at all. And I think that, you know, that whole party atmosphere, that whole player coach, that whole Rex Ryan, you know, it's going to come back to haunt them. Every time they lose, they're going to lose big. And every time they win, everybody's going to say, well, they should have won. And I think that's what's going to haunt them the whole year.
But the thing about
but
it
is, what I think you can take from it, what I think you can take from it is that they adjusted. They adjusted. They saw what they didn't do well, and they came back, and they adjusted. And I think that's what you want to see. And that's really early in the season, that's what you want to see from week to week. Are we making the adjustments that we need to make? Because if they had to come out and look like they did the week before, then I would be writing them off. I would be writing them off. If they look exactly, because it's like, okay, yeah, y'all didn't do jack shit in practice all week. All right, y'all didn't do nothing. Y'all let Cromartie run practice, and y'all had cheerleaders running around with nothing on and all that kind of stuff.
They play next week.
You know,
who do they play next week?
Miami.
Miami.
If they win, they in good shape. They beat two division teams.
Yeah.
That's a big
and
game.
Just a side note before we move on, LT's the best back on that team, hands down.
Right.
Hands down. LT is running well.
LT is running well.
So I just wanted to put that out in the atmosphere real quick. We're gonna move on to the Giants and Colts. We all went with the Colts, just because big brothers always beat up on little brothers for the most part. And it was no different. The Colts just laid into the Giants, and you know, I watched about half of that game and I was like, this is really like the big brother beating up on the little brother. Like, you know, I've done this before. I have four little brothers, for those that don't know. And I would beat them up. And, you know, I would get them down on the ground, and I would put my knees on their shoulders and take their hands and just, like, start smacking them in the face, you know, tell them, you know, stop hitting yourself. And that's basically what the Colts and Peyton did to Eli and them on Sunday night. I mean, they just jumped on top of him and just said, you know, quit hitting yourself. Because – and really, Peyton was a beneficiary of the fact that the Giants could not block Freeney and Mathis.
Yeah.
I mean, them boys was coming off the corner. I mean, they showed one replay where Mathis came around and dipped underneath the offensive tackle. And this man, I mean, he's only like, you know, 5'1" anyway. But he was running like at a 45-degree angle with the ground. Like, he was running like sideways. It was ridiculous how fast he was moving and like how he was running like sideways, like he wasn't even upright. And then he got to Eli. It was the Giants' offensive tackles just wasn't ready. I mean, they wasn't ready. The Giants don't seem like they're ready. They look like they're in a little bit of trouble. You know, people coming out. Antrell Roll, he came out, did an interview on the radio today talking about how they don't have any leadership in the locker room. And, you know, the captains are Eli, Justin Tuck, and I think a special teams player. But I know Eli and Tuck are both quiet guys, and, you know, they're not real get-in-your-face, rah-rah, you know, they're not, and neither one of them is going to be mistaken for Ray Lewis as far as being a vocal leader, and I think that may be hurting the Giants, and that's something that has been a knock on them since Strahan and Tiki Barber and those guys left.
Yeah. I think, you know, first of all, I felt like calling the local police in Indianapolis. I thought there was an assault going on. And somebody needs to get arrested. Because anyway, they just beat them down. There's a couple. This is back what I was just telling you about the Steelers. You got an identity, right? Don't get lost in Eli. Yeah, you gave him the money. That's cool. But you got an identity. And so two things. On offense, they abandon the run. So even when it was down like 14-0 or 7-0, they weren't running the football. And you can run on in and out. So I don't care what people say. And
they ran
did
on
not,
the week before.
Yeah, they did not commit to the run. Defensively, I don't know what they're doing. You know, defensively, they have no identity. And at a certain point, you don't have Strahan, so you just can't let your front four create pressure. You know, at some point, you're going to have to get a little more creative, especially if your offense is out, and try to think about how you might mix your things up, particularly against Peyton. Keep him off balance. And I saw nothing creative out of that defense. And I didn't see a commitment to run it. And that, to me, that's Giants football. And so they got to go back there and reevaluate that, because that's how you slow people like Mathis and folks down, is by running the football. Because they're going to go right up straight up the field. and they're not, they didn't have any commitment to the run. And Eli just looked confused. So they got a lot to think. If you're a Giants fan, you got to be worried. Because there's nothing I saw in that game that tells me that it's something is promising. Other than maybe Smith, your receiver. I mean, he might be the most promising. I don't see a lot of other promising pieces.
Yeah, I mean, watching the game, the coach systematically dismantled them. I mean, you can see it. Page ran about 5 or 6 run plays in a row, play action, touchdown. I mean, they kept running the ball, and they were gashing them, 5 yards here, 6 yards there. They moving the ball, and, Peyton called the play action. And the safety just sprints up. Like, I know this guy's getting the ball, just full speed. And he just dunked it over his head. And that was that. So, the coach just seemed like a more prepared team. They had a game plan. They stuck with it. They executed it. And, they took it to the Giants. So,
yeah.
Those were our highlight games for the week. Me and Devon picked up 2. We both dropped 2. Ray picked up 1 and dropped 3. So, better luck next week, Ray.
and don't leave that Giants game without wondering why Brandon Jacobs threw his helmet up in the stand.
Well, after seeing the lack of commitment to the run, I would throw my helmet up there too.
Hey, I wouldn't have gave him the ball neither, man. Did you actually watch Brandon Jacobs run, man? He was running like he was 5'1", 140 pounds. Like,
yeah,
he's 6'4", 260. Run up into the line.
Yeah, he like tippy toe burglar. Yeah, he up in there like the tippy toe burglar. I see that already. Yes. There's no, like you said, there's no leadership. I don't know where it's coming from at all. But they in trouble because now the Eagles got a game plan. And, Dallas is not going to stay down for long. So the Giants, Washington seem to be getting their act together. The Giants better do something. Some hair's going to roll.
Yeah, and you're right. Washington looks good. The Cowboys, and we can go into that now. We can talk about some of these 0-2 and these 2-0 teams. So let's go through the 0-2s first. For 0-2 teams, we got Dallas, we got Minnesota, Detroit, Carolina, St. Louis, San Francisco, Buffalo, Cleveland, and that rounds it out right there.
Not San Francisco.
Yeah, San Francisco's 0-2.
Are they?
They lost to Seattle.
Yeah, they lost. Seattle caught them in week 1, and then they lost to the Saints last night.
That's right.
Yeah, so, Cleveland, Buffalo, St. Louis, Carolina, and, Detroit to a certain extent, you kind of are not surprised that they're 0-2. Detroit, I expect them to, do better than they've done in previous years, but Carolina, St. Louis, Buffalo, and Cleveland will all be competing for the first pick in the draft. I think that's pretty obvious right now. But I think the most surprising, too, and San Francisco is a team that's somewhat surprising because I think they have a lot of expectations. Lucky for them, they're in the NFC West, and they should be able to rebound and, climb out of that and still win that division. I mean, nobody's running away with that. That is a
terrible
a contest of the most ugliest. That's a beauty pageant full of ugly women right there. Dallas and Minnesota. I mean, we'll start with Dallas first since we were talking about the NFC East. What's up?
Dallas, to me, all the talent underperform comes to coach. When you see a team like Dallas not perform, and I know they talk a little bit about where the offensive line is, and first of all, they don't have a commitment to the run, so I don't know how they can evaluate where the offensive line is, but I don't see an identity with them like we should. They got a good defense. They should be committing to the run. I think they just got so enamored with the receiving core. And with Tony Romo, again, sometimes don't get caught up with the how people look in the locker room and how they walk around. You got to know where you are. And you in the NFC East where it's about being physical. And so I think part of, Dallas's problem is that
Wade is not that – they need a coach that's a little bit more demonstrative. I hate to say it. Wade is a hell of a defensive coordinator.
But he's not a head coach. And, whenever you have a team with that much talent that's not producing, you have to fire that coach. I don't want to be nice to him.
And where's Jason Garrett? Now, this guy was the guy that everybody was saying was going to rise to the ranks of the coaching, and he turned down the job.
I'm with you on that one, D. You need to hold court about that one for a minute. Where is Jason Garrett? You know, because you're right. He was supposed to be the next great head coach, and dude's not even a good coordinator right now.
Yeah. I mean, he's got all the weapons to produce. You know, he can't find a way to get the guys to produce. You got Witten. I mean, it's unbelievable weapons that they have there. Even if your offensive line is struggling, if he's that creative, there's ways that you can give ball to people because he's got plenty of places to go. So that part I just don't understand, you know, them. And so do you guys see how Jerry Jones is going? Does he think he can make a move and still salvage his season? I mean, you know Jerry's thinking it. You know, is he going to wait to the end? I mean, Jerry got a big stadium that he got. You know, he's filling in a lot of other ways with Pacquiao and a whole bunch of other stuff. But he built that stadium to fill it for the Cowboys, not for Pacquiao.
Yeah.
So
he's got to have an ulcer right now because that team should not be there. You know, he's got to feel it.
Ray put him in the infirmary.
Yeah, I mean he's an Al Davis clone. I mean he's down on the sidelines and he's slapping butts and you know trying to pump him up and it's like, you know, they're not going to get where they need to go. With Wade.
Yeah, you know, Ray, I actually watching the Cowboys play this week, I wrote that down. I was like, are the Cowboys headed to becoming the Raiders? Are they on their way to becoming the Raiders, where they're stuck in the 90s? You know, the Raiders are stuck in the 70s when they were good.
Right.
Are the Cowboys going to be stuck in the 90s? You know, is that what we're looking at, where the Cowboys just can't move forward? They had such a good run that they – you know, they can't get over it.
We talk about Flacco, we talk about Sanchez, you know, we talk about Palmer. You know, we need to talk about Romo. You know, we need to talk about what he can do. You know, at some point, you got to play, you know.
And what I would say on that, it was interesting about him is they're not really the Raiders because they're not.
Not yet. Are they headed that way, though?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I was like thinking, are they the Raiders or are you thinking it might be Snyder's Washington Redskins? Think about it, they got all the talent there. It's not a mismanagement of personnel, not in terms of drafting. It's not, you know, they've done all the right things. What it is it's a crisis of leadership on the field in a way that is not even the same as the Raiders or not. So, you know, From a management standpoint, they made all the right moves with drafting personnel. They got some good players there. They brought some good stuff.
But remember, this is how it started out with the Raiders. I think it was as early as 2001. The Raiders was in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And they had Gruden, and they had Charles Woodson, and they had Rich Gannon, and they had talent on that team. But slowly but surely, the decrepit old owner started to creep in. And you know, he turned the franchise into the dude who's 24 hanging out at the high school because high school was the best time of his life trying to relive his teenage years. It's like, nah, you're 24, man. Move on, you know. Get a job. Get married. Get some kids, you know. Quit hanging out at the high school, you know. Are the Cowboys headed down that road? You know, these seem like good moves now, but these players may start to leave because they're like, yo, man, there ain't no leadership. Because that's what hurt the Raiders. Gruden left, and once Gruden left, there was a vacuum of leadership. Because Gruden was a buffer between the team and the owner. And when you got a meddling owner, you need a strong coach who the owner, one, respects, but then at least respects. But then two, who can stand up to the owner and say, nah, that's not how we're going to do this. Like, you're not going to run my team. You know, and when you don't have that, and you have an owner who is very hands-on, as Jerry is, it could go downhill real fast. Because as much as acumen as Jerry has as a businessman, he's a great businessman and a decent football guy. You know, and I think Al Davis was the same way. Good businessman, decent football guy. But because he had some success, he started to think he was a much better football guy than he really was.
And Al Davis at Davis Trade, he knew a lot about football. Now, he got stuck in a time war. There was a time where Al really knew football. You know, where and I think the Cowboys' biggest problem, where Jerry's had his most success is having strong-minded coaches.
Yep.
But that relationship's not going to last so long. It's like, you know, it's going to love, hate. It's going to be volatile. We're going to get together and do this for 3 years because we can't live a long time together. And mm-hmm. I don't know, you know, maybe that's Gruden. You know, maybe that's somebody like that.
Well, Bill Cowher's still out there.
Yeah, Bill Cowher. I mean, he's got to think about it. And the piece he's got to think about is how long is he going to let this go? Is he going to let this be a death march for Wade?
He's not known to fire guys during the season, so he's going to let it be a death march. If Wade can't get it together, then, you know, Wade's going to be a dead man walking.
But he has fired better coaches with less talent on that football team. And why he would wait, you know, is beyond me. You know, you don't make a change in the middle of the season. It's fruitless. You're not going to, unless you bring somebody up in the ranks interim and then hire that head coach in the, you know, in the winter after the season is over. But you know, Jones has finally put enough talent on the field to be successful. There were some years there where, you know, he had some decent coaching, but they didn't really have the personnel to get it done. This team seems as though it has the personnel to get it done. And when you can't push it through, you know, you have to blame the head coach for that. You have to look at that head coach. You know, one of my favorite sayings, sometimes you look at the fruit, sometimes you look at the tree. And in this case, you got to look at the tree. You know.
That sounds like an old South Beloit proverb.
The fruit might be a bit spoiled, but right now it's because the tree is bad. You got to get rid of that tree.
So how do y'all feel about the Cowboys? Do they have a shot of turning this around? Do y'all see them making the playoffs? I think the number was like, I think I want to say it's like 24% of teams that start 0-2 make the playoffs or something like that. I could be wrong. I could be misquoting the number, but I think it was in about a quarter of the teams that start 0-2 historically make the playoffs. Cowboys, one of that quarter.
I think what's going to hurt them is the fact that Eagles made this move with Vic. Could have an impact on them. And Washington playing where they're playing. And then the Bears showing up like they're showing up, whether you want to buy where they're going or not. There's a couple teams that are kind of stacking up on them that weren't supposed to, especially the Eagles. I mean, everybody knew what was wrong with the Cobb experience. That could have given them a chance to bounce back. But as soon as you throw Vic in there, that makes the Eagles an entirely different team. So I think, I mean, they got the talent to do it, but, you know, they got to have more of these player-only meetings. And, you know, Jason Garrett, you know, because the defense, one thing I got to tell Wade, the way he got built, the defense, he took over the defense, they've been doing it, and that defense is playing.
Mm-hmm.
He got to figure out how to light something up in that offense a little bit, get a little bit more consistent play, a little bit more dominating running game, a little bit more of that has to go because they should have been running the ball more against the Bears. And that is Jason Garrett. You know, we're paying you all this money. You know, if I'm Wade, I might have to move Garrett out there. You got to do something. But you got to do something to get that offense going in a more consistent way because the defense is there, wearing them out there playing, and they just, you know, that locker room has got to be pissed. They're on that side of the ball. And they've been playing their butts off, and not, you know, not getting the kind of help they should be getting. So I think that the only thing they got to watch out for is now that Vic is in Philadelphia taking over, that's going to hurt their chances. They ain't got a lot of wiggle.
So you said, so you saying no?
I'm saying no.
Okay. Ray, what you got? Is the Cowboys recovering that?
I think the Cowboys are going to recover. They're not a bad football team. If they, you know, success breeds success. If they can get a good game going and you know, get some things moving, you know, you'll see the talent come through. Right now, they're just looking really terrible, and they don't know which direction to go. The Bears, you know, they've been playing inspiring football, so, you know, losing to the Bears, they should, you know, take a look at that, and it's kind of like that San Francisco loss last night. You know, yes, they lost last night, but was it really a bad game? And will they take it, you know, will they take it to practice this week and build upon it? And that's what the Cowboys have to do, is figure out how they're going to build upon what they can do. They don't look dominating during the run. You know, they don't have a decent running game. So that's where they need to, you know, go back again to establishing the run and let, you know, Romo open it up. I think they can bounce back. I think they have enough talent on both sides of the ball to do that. But to call, you know, again, at the beginning of the year, you know, they were talking about Dallas being in the Super Bowl. Will they make the playoffs?
Yeah.
Will they do anything more? I don't think they have. I don't think so, you know.
Yeah.
They showed themselves pretty poorly these last 2 weeks, and I think Jerry Jones' expectations have to go down quite a bit.
Okay, so you got them bouncing back or no?
I got them bouncing back to the playoffs, yes.
Okay, so I'm writing this shit down, so just so you know.
I don't see them being a big threat, you know.
Okay.
Again, win a couple games and they can get on a roll, but still, you know, it's not like they're not like the Packers right now. You know, right now the Packers,
okay,
they're going to look back on these last two games, no matter how many games they win, and still, you know, blink. And good football teams don't blink. They go straight ahead,
yeah.
They get hit, but they don't blink. And now Dallas, no matter what they do for the rest of the year, they're going to blink. They're a good football team. They'll make the playoffs, but every time they're in a tough game, they're going to blink.
Yeah, I think they'll finish over 500. I don't think they're mentally tough on the offensive side of the ball, and I think you have to be. I don't think they have any leadership on that side of the ball. So I think they're gonna compete in the NFC East, but I just can't. I think when it gets tight late in the season, and the way the schedule is structured now, when you play divisional games those last couple of weeks, I just see them getting into it and then falling out of it. So I'm gonna go no. I'm gonna go no on that one.
America loves a train wreck.
Yeah. Can't look away.
A train wreck. They love a train wreck.
Can't look away. Yeah. And speaking of train wrecks, it's just like there's a train wreck brewing in Minnesota. As they're 0-2 now. You know, as they're 0-2, I'm gonna have to get some train wreck sound effects. Minnesota at 0-2, man, and you know, Marv is old. I mean,
I know you're gonna have some. We might have some wire cut somewhere, but it's like the old line, like Marlo said when he was in there talking to the security guard who got on him for taking a sucker, and he said,
yeah,
you want it one way, but it's the other. Favre,
yeah,
you want it one way, but it's the other. He about to end up in that empty house with a shot in the back, because they look terrible and no receiving core.
Well, I think Bradshaw said it this weekend when he said Brett Favre looks like an old man that just don't want to play anymore.
You know, and they use those wire analogies, Devon. To use a wire analogy, I liken Brett Favre right now to Omar.
Yeah.
When Omar came back, he was in the islands, he was chilling, you know, he was kicking it and relaxing. And for those of you that don't know, The Wire, HBO, if you've never seen it, get off 5 seasons, it's the best show, best TV show ever. Anyway, one of the characters is Omar. He's a vigilante, gunslinging, renegade-type cat. He robs drug dealers. You know, he don't give the money to the poor, but he robs drug dealers. So anyway, Omar, you know, he goes on sabbatical. He retires. And, you know, he gets brought back out of retirement, man. You know, somebody sends him a message. He gets brought back out of retirement. And, you know, he comes back and he's doing his thing. And he has, you know, he has a nice little run. But then he gets hurt. But after he gets hurt, he's still trying to operate as the old Omar, as the healthy Omar. And he winds up getting killed in a liquor store by an 8-year-old. And that's how Brett Favre's story is going to end. Some rookie is going to blast him. Some rookie is going to give him one of them remember me hits, and that's going to be it for Brett. We may see the first football player die on the football field. Like, I feel like Brett Favre is going to die on the football field because this man just looks so out of place right now. He just looks so out of, like, somebody should have pulled him aside and be like, Brett, you're 41. Missing training camp may not be the best thing for you. You need to be as sharp as you can be because you ain't that quick no more.
But I might even throw another one in there. This is the best example we've seen in boxing. You know, the Thrill in Manila, they said Ali and Frazier came out and they weren't the same. Right? They just were not the same people. They left something in the ring. And that, what New Orleans did to him in that playoff game, I just think he left something in the ring that day. And he has not been the same since. You see, they showed him walking that day. You could see him limping. He looked like he was walking in limping. He looked beat down. He, for the first time, he looked old.
You know what it was? You know what it was, Devon? And we've all had this, and I've had this moment. You know, I'm about to turn 30 in December. And, you know, y'all probably have had more of these moments than I have. But we've all had these moments where something happens and you look around and you just say to yourself, I'm too old for this shit. And that's what that New Orleans game was. That's what the New Orleans games was. Brett Favre got lit up all day, and after the game was over, he stood out there in the locker room, looked around, looked at his teammates, listen to his coach give that speech. And he just blazed over for a second, snapped back and said, you know, I'm too old for this shit. And that's what that game was in New Orleans.
I think he forgot how he got to where he was last year. Playing in that NFC Championship game, you know, they had a young Percy Harvin nobody knew about. He came out and exploited the league as a rookie. Rice and him were on the same page. He had the big tight end, you know. He really had he had a nice setup last year, and now, you know, Harvin has got a bad hip, got migraines. Rice isn't even there. He just doesn't have, you know. He thought, and this is Brett Favre. He thought that they were so good because he was so good, and now they're finding out that they're not so good, no matter how good he could be, if they don't have those other pieces to the puzzle. Brett Favre's not going to win a Super Bowl or apparently a game for you if you don't have enough time to run. You know? And that's what Brett Favre is starting to realize. That's why he looked like a guy that don't want to play anymore. You know, Brett's looking around going, shit, I guess I can't do this by myself.
Yeah.
And it's showing. I mean, you know, and what makes Minnesota look so bad to me is that before Brett got there, Adrian Peterson was the Vikings, and they were winning football games without Brett because they had Adrian Peterson. Now they're still trying to play like it's midway through last year, like he still has a receiving core, like he can still get that ball off, like he can still send that ball downfield. They should have
been listening too much of that print.
Exactly.
They trying to party like it's 99.
That's right. They should have never got away from who they were. Brett Favre would have played a good Elway role if he would have understood what that role was.
But he got a big ego.
Exactly. Exactly. Now Brett Favre is out there going,
where's big ego? His ego's too big, man. He can't take that role. He can't take that role. He can't take a backseat.
No.
You know, Minnesota, are they going to the playoffs? Are they going to recover? Ray.
No. Unless they get some receiving help, some bona fide receiving help, and where are they going to get it from? Who has these, you know, who has so many receivers on their team they can just give the Vikings one? And why would they?
Yeah. Well, I heard they're trying to get Vincent Jackson is what the whispers are. That they're trying to make a move, but San Diego's gonna fleece them, man. San Diego's going raw. You talking about making a deal with the devil?
And what are you getting? You're getting another player who didn't go to camp.
Yeah, you know? He's gonna pull his hammy.
Yeah, you got another player that didn't go to camp.
You're getting two hamstrings ready to be pulled.
You know, Mr. Jackson. Right,
yeah.
You know, he's no savior.
Yeah,
and that's the part that I'm saying. The thing about it is I'm not down on them like I'm down on the Cowboys.
Really?
The reason why I'm saying that is they played a couple tough games, and for some reason, I don't know. Yeah, no, actually, because I don't think you got two teams out of that central. Your success, you have to depend on whether or not I think the Green Bay is going to be consistent. You got to feel like you got to make this call. You got to figure out whether or not you believe in Chicago.
See, I don't even think it matters whether or not you believe in Chicago, because I think when you look at the NFC East, Philly may pull that division out, and Washington and New York look solid. You also got to look at the NFC South. Atlanta and New Orleans, I think, are both playoff teams. You know, so that's three of the spots right there, and then whoever wins that division is two spots left, you know, or one spot left, really, because you got – the division winner in the NFC North, and then you got whoever wins, you know, that ugly pageant in the NFC West. And you got one spot, and it's either Chicago, Minnesota, Dallas, you know, if Tampa Bay keeps it up, or, you know, maybe Arizona turns it around. Who knows? But
yeah, I mean, in the NFC, I mean, you can almost make the argument that if Minnesota bounced back a little bit, that division is, you know, one of the toughest. If they keep having that kind of success, one of the best, you know, at least in it might be the best in the NFC. So you can make an argument about, you know, depending on how they keep playing. Yeah, I don't like Favre. I'm gonna say no, because I like train wrecks. if Minnesota train wreck, and if Dallas train wreck, boy, this gonna make for good talk. Because they ain't
yeah,
go down
it does,
high.
Man.
They're not, they're not gonna go down easy. If Favre do go down, it's gonna be the most painful sight. I mean, every week for him will be like 1 minute.
He's thrown as many picks. He has, you know, last year he didn't throw this many picks until December.
But
he
December.
Right now, Brett Favre is standing in a burning building with gasoline draws on.
Yeah,
it's gonna be ugly.
You know, Dallas has the talent to win a couple games and get on a roll. Minnesota just does not have the talent to play.
Yeah, long term. I don't see the way Favre is playing. I don't see him staying healthy long term, long enough for them to be able to salvage anything.
The only reason I say that is, again, and the kind of thing we talked about with LeBron and Cleveland, who's running the program. If they went back to messing with Adrian Peterson, they could win. They just be winning games 17-10. They got a defense.
That's right. That's
so
right.
Play field position. They got tight ends. They got some talent, but it's not in the spots that they had it last year. They got some tight ends. They got some stuff they could run. Favre is smart enough, and Ray, I think you hit it right on the head, to run that Elway-type game. We're going to do some play action, some bootleg. We're going to move the chains. And we're going to win this baby 17-10. They got that kind of defense. The problem is whether or not you could do that with Brett, the way that Elway allowed it to be done to him. To say, look, we just ain't got the talent to run that kind of offense. We need to make it.
Because remember, when things went sour last year, why did they go sour? Because him and Brad Childress was getting into it over who was calling the shots.
That's right.
And Brett's ego is not going to let him. Brett's looking at this like, I didn't come back to hand the fucking ball off.
You know what I'm saying?
But I just hope
I didn't jump on that private jet to come up here and be a caretaker. I came up here to play some football.
But that's right, where you got to see what kind of leader Adrian Peterson is. So Adrian got to figure out how he going to step up, because this is going to be his team after Brett leaves. So he got to figure out what.
It needs to be his team now.
Exactly. It should have been his team last year. They might have went to the Super Bowl. Adrian Peterson stepped aside.
But it can't be a team where you have a star defensive player going down there and kissing his boots. The owner going down there and doing all that. When you do all
I
that.
Just hope, I just hope Brett has enough Southern gentlemanly courtesy to drive Childress to the airport after the season when they're both done. Childress picked his ass up last year. I hope Brett will drive him to the airport when they leave.
Invite him to kill him to draw up some plays, to draw up some routes he could throw to them high schools.
Yeah.
He could be the offensive coordinator at the high school.
Again, I believe Dallas has the talent to turn this around. But if Minnesota continues to try to play and try to recapture that the glory of last year, that lightning in the bottle, they're done. And Adrian Peterson, as good as he is, he should have been kicking and screaming last year. He should be kicking and screaming right now.
But see, then his Q rating going to go down. Then his Q score going to go down. Everybody going to like him. Talk too damn much. Let's move on to the 2-0s.
So who would you instead of, what did you think? Did you say Minnesota? You said no on Minnesota,
Mark? Oh, They done.
I got them dying as well.
The party's over. You know, they can throw on some Prince records and just pretend like it's another time, because it ain't happening in Minnesota this year. It's just a mess right now. And I think, you know, they brought Favre in to pull the trigger, and he got arthritis. So the trigger will not be pulled the way they want it to be when it needs to be.
I wouldn't be shocked if Brett packed a bag and left. You know.
Yo, you telling me, I would actually love that. If he just like in the middle of the night, hey, are you guys familiar with Harlem Nights? You see the movie Harlem Nights?
Yeah.
You know the scene where old boy's laying down in bed, and he jumps up out of the bed, he was with the prostitute, he jumps up out of the bed, and he gets on the phone, and he calls his kids, and he's like, yo, tell your mother I ain't coming home no more. I could see Brett Favre pulling one of those, man. Being like, yo, man. He called Ryan Longwell, hey, Ryan, you know, tell Chili I ain't coming back no more. Take it easy.
Yeah, I'm going home.
Enough is enough. Yeah, so you got the other 0-2 teams. Is that the AFC? What are we looking at?
Man, the AFC, Cleveland and Buffalo, the 0-2s. They're supposed to be 0-2. So we're going to move on from the 0-2.
Wait a second. Talk about San Francisco. Don't go to the AFC.
San Francisco is going to turn it around. Their division is weak enough, and they're a good enough team. They show well. They're going to turn it around.
They played with a lot of heart last night.
Yeah, they did.
And I'm rooting for Singletary to be successful.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm rooting. I think San Francisco is going to turn it around. I still got them winning that division. I mean, they 0-2 in their game out, so I'll take that. You know, as far as their chances. But let's go on to the 2-0s. So we're looking at these 2-0s. And what I want to know is, do you believe in this team or not? You know, do you believe in this team, and if so, why? All right. So let's start in the AFC. Houston. Houston's 2-0. You believe, or are they faking it?
Wow, you believe?
I believe. I believe they have enough talent to be a real team. You know, as terrible as they may have played in the past, they can put up points. They can score. And as long as you can do that, you can win some ball games. I think they're real. I don't see them going, you know. I don't see them going, you know. We're not going to talk about them, you know, going 10-0 or anything like that. you know, because they were going to get scored on. But I believe.
Okay.
Okay. Devon?
I believe. I think they are demonstrating, you know, a resolve. I mean, I guess Washington, you know, they just said, we just not going to get beat. So there's something about them that's telling me games that they would have lost, they're winning. And so I believe.
Okay. Yeah, I believe too. I agree. What they did last week really showed me something because, again, that's a team that, you know, mental toughness is big with me. And can you win a game that you probably should lose? And they won the game, I think, last week they probably should have lost. And they had to come back and fight back to do that. And to me that says that, you know, when you can come from behind, that's a big plus in the NFL because, you know, the NFL is a game where once you get behind, it's really tough to get the momentum back in your favor. And the fact that they were able to come back.
They've grown into that role.
Exactly, and that's a mental shift that you can see taking place with them. Is that now that they're confident enough and they're well enough schooled in the art of competing, well, they can come back. You know, they can be down and come back. I think that's, you know, when you talk about, you know, when I work with kids and I'm working with them to teach them how to play basketball, I tell them they have to master the art of competing just as much as they have to master the skill of shooting or the skill of dribbling or the skill of passing. You got to master the art of competing. And part of that, you know, is being able to come from behind. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you can come from behind, that says that you understand how to compete and how to stay focused in the game and not let the scoreboard dictate your effort, you know, and all those different things. And so it seems like they figured that out. So I believe.
I think
they're going to make the playoffs.
I was going to ask you just a side note. Maybe we could talk about this after this. What does this say about the Williams selection? You remember the big debate and about Houston selecting him? Because that defense is, you know, they struggle a little bit with Washington, but, you know, they put some physical play in the Indianapolis game. And, you know, that pick, you know, just from a leadership standpoint, it looked like a good pick, you know, at a time where
Well, they knew. I mean, they obviously did their homework, and they said, damn, what everybody else thinks, this kid is. And maybe they just said, this kid is not crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's what they came to the conclusion. Like, this is the only kid that's not crazy. Like, Reggie Bush is on some other stuff. And Vince Young, you know, failed the Wonderlic. His psychological profile ain't that of an NFL quarterback. You know, Matt Leinart was another possibility. They probably said, I'm good on him. And they said, you know, we got to take somebody. And this kid is a defensive end, a pass rusher, and he ain't them. So, you know, or maybe they saw what he could be because he's been a really good player for them.
And I think they
knew what they wanted.
Yeah, and you know, and what they did was they took a page out of the, you know, out of Jim Fink's playbook. I mean, they understood to build a championship team, you got to do on a defensive and offensive line. And so you look at all those players, where do you start building championships? And that was really the debate. You know, you look at all these high-profile offensive players, but when you look at great championship teams, you know, mm-hmm. when you talk about they got that defense and that offensive front that sets the tone. So I'm just saying something about their organization and why they're here. You know, they committed to a way of doing work, and they're sticking to it. And, you know, it has a lot to do with McNair, you know, the owner, you know, that they're, mm-hmm. that they're sticking to their plan. And, that, you know, now you kind of know. You're beginning to say you know who they are. You know, I think that's what I like about them.
Yeah. Okay, so we all in on Houston. Kansas City. Now I know D. This was your sleeper. You know, a couple of weeks back, you said that this would be one of those teams that wasn't in last year that may be in this year. Kansas City is 2-0. You know, Matt Castle still really doesn't impress me. They're winning, but I think they're winning because they've done what you said. They've invested. If you look at their last five drafts, they put a lot of high picks into their defensive front and their offensive front.
And I think that those investments are starting to pay off as those players are maturing. They got some nice running backs, you know, and as long as they're running the ball with that 1-2 punch of Charles and Jones, I think they're going to be all right. You know, I don't know if they overtake San Diego but I think they're going to be in it till the end. I don't know. I think they may be a year away from getting the playoff spot because I think for a lot of, they do have a young team. And so again, as you go down the stretch and you get into those late season games, are they going to be still mentally focused enough to win those games? And, you know, are they going to have those slip ups along the way that young teams tend to get caught up in, you know, losing a game that they shouldn't have lost down the stretch when things start to get tight? So those are the things that I think they're going to be real competitive. I think they're going to be right in the divisional race to the end, but I think they're going to fall a little bit short.
I would say that, you know, and I picked that off the team. I believe them because I think they're going in the right direction. Like you said, I think they got all the pieces. You know, they're drafting and building personnel like Kansas City has historically. I mean, they've been, you know, they kind of always, you know, back to Deron Cherry and a lot. I mean, they always just seem to get guys who get it right. But I also think they got some really good coaches. And, you know, that can teach these young players how to win. And, you know, they seem to be organized, know what they want to do, they know who they are. And so, yeah, I believe them. Now, I don't know if that means they're going to make a lot of noise, but I think they're going to win a lot more games than everybody thought they were going to win. You know, if they get to 8 wins.
I can co-sign that. I can co-sign that, yeah.
And I like them, you know, and we'll talk about the Bears, too, I'm sure, in a minute. But I like them for the same type of reasons that I'd like the Bears. And that is, you don't really know how they're going to score. You know, they're not they don't have that player or those two players or that quarterback or you don't know how they're gonna score, but they have enough talent on that offense to do just that. They score on you and they can score on you from many different angles. Now that doesn't really make for a great football team, but what it does is it keeps those defenses in check. And it's hard to prepare for a team that you don't know if it's Charles is going to run the ball or if it's Jones. You're not going to pattern these guys. You're not going to have a defense out there on the field that just says, flood this way or flood that way because, you know, this is where we got to make that stop. You don't know how they're going to come at you. And when you have teams backpedaling like that, especially this year, now if they can mature as an offense and put some things together where you know what they're going to do on first and second down, and they still do that to you, even though you know what might be coming. That's the makings of a great football team. But right now, what they have is an offense that is confusing. You don't know where it's going to come from, but you know all you know is it's going to come. They're going to just keep coming at you. They'll win their share of ball games. Whether or not they make the playoffs, I don't know. Because, you know, they're going to have to figure out fully, you know, how to, you know, when you need that, you know, 3 yards, do they really have that play that they have in the book to get that? Right now, they can run just about anything, and the defense has got to stand back and just wait to see what happens. They have so many different ways to come at you, and they haven't really, you know, established themselves or committed themselves to any one way of attacking you. And as long as they have that confusing way to go after you, they'll score their points and they'll win some ball games. And they'll win more ball games than people give them credit for. I don't think people realize, you know, just the amount of talent they truly have.
And see, you point out something that's real interesting there because you put them in the same, you link them with the Bears in that sense.
Sure.
You know, I can see that linkage because the Bears have a new coordinator, and the Chiefs have new coordinators, and they got Cornell and Weiss now running defense and offense. And so I think, you know, with them, that there's that freshness, that newness, that other teams they're doing things that other teams haven't seen them do, and so that's allowing them to catch people off guard. And in the NFL, man, that's all it takes. That's really all it takes is a misstep this way, a misstep that way, because you're seeing something that you weren't expecting to see. So yeah, those are good points. Yeah, those are real good points. So you got them. You think they're going to pull it out?
Well, I think that they'll win some ball games. I don't know that they will have the wherewithal to you know, to be a playoff contender or to even make the playoffs. So they're certainly going to win more ball games than anybody thinks. And
okay.
One of those.
Okay, so.
That, oh.
Yes.
I
mean, so all of us got to winning some games and being in it to the end, but we don't think they're gonna pull it out.
I don't think they'll make the playoffs. No.
Okay. Yeah. So I agree. I think they're a year away. I think, you know, give them one more year figuring out who they're gonna be in. And I think they'll have a shot. Then we got Pittsburgh, 2-0. I'm going all in. I'm all in on them. I think they. I think the question is going to be how long does it take them to get Ben back on the same page with everybody else. But I mean, the defense is back. I mean, they've given up 20 points in two games. I mean, they playing Steeler ball. I mean, and that is a winning formula. So I'm going with the Steelers going pretty far in the playoffs, making the playoffs, winning that division, and going pretty far.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm going with the Steelers. I think, you know, I've seen this pattern with them. I think they're hitting the stride. You know, they're getting away from the stuff they tried to do last year that is so far away from their identity. I think Ben, given all he's been, will just fold right into that. I think they're ready. If Polamalu just looks crazy, ridiculous, jumping over the line and hitting the quarterback. I mean, he just, you know, he's doing his thing. You know, he's all over the field. He's doing things that you can't do with a lot of other safeties. So I think they're ready to go. They got some of the old pieces back on defense, helping out, building that depth in. So, you know, I'm excited to see what they're going to do.
And I look at Pittsburgh as being one of those teams that when a team like Pittsburgh starts up 2-0, they make the playoffs. You know, you can question Houston, you can question Kansas City, but I can't really question Pittsburgh. They are an elite team, and it seems like they have a good year and then a bad year and then, you know, a mediocre year, whatever. But when a team like Pittsburgh starts out 2-0. And are waiting for their starting quarterback, I would not want to bet against a team like that. I think they'll do things differently when Ben gets there, and I think they'll settle into their offense a little bit when Ben gets there.
So,
no question.
Okay. So, Pittsburgh, Miami, 2-0. Yay or nay? I'm going to throw it to Ray first on this one.
I still don't believe in Miami. I still, you know, Miami is one of those teams that beat you in a lot of different ways for a long time, or, you know, for the last couple of years. They still haven't established that identity. They still, you know, are waiting, you know, I don't know how they're going to come at you. But teams, you know, have a better chance now of understanding that, you know, and try to play a little bit more disciplined. Unlike Kansas City, where they'll keep you guessing, Miami's going to keep you guessing, but you know that coming, you've got the whole week to prepare for that. So I still don't believe in Miami. I don't think they're that great of a football team. I don't think that they have that kind of talent, even with the two running backs that they have.
I'm going to say, you know, they're going to be competitive. This weekend will tell a lot about where they're going to be with the Jets. Chad Henne just got to be able to make some plays. I think he looked decent, but you know, I'm just biased. I watched him in Michigan make just some bad throws. I mean, he's a good guy, playing well. I watched him make some bad throws. So it's hard for me to go all chips in with him. They just gonna be competitive every game, and they're gonna be good. I don't think that they have enough to get over top on some of these other teams. So are they not gonna make? I think they'll make the playoffs. They might fight for that last spot, but you know, they're about a year away from where I think they can be right now.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm going to go no also. I just think that division is too tough. If I had to pick two teams to make the playoffs in that division, I would pick New England and the Jets before I pick Miami. Not to say that they can't make it, but if I had to put money down today on two teams to make it out of that division, I would bet on New England and New York before I bet on Miami. you know, for a lot of the same reasons. Henny is still unproven. You know, are they still even running the Wildcat? You know, are they still running the gimmicks? You know, when are they gonna kind of establish an identity outside of the gimmicks? You know, I think it's something that Ray's pointing out. So yeah, I agree with both you guys as far as those points, but I don't see them getting in the playoffs this year. You know, I think what will determine is can they continue to build their offensive line. If they can still keep building their offensive line, and then if they can also develop some continuity and develop a strong connection between Marshall and Henny, and Marshall can become that go-to receiver that Miami hasn't had in years, then I think they can make some moves. So, you know, but I only see them going that far. Other 0-2s, or I'm sorry, 2-0s, we have Tampa. Devon, Tampa Bay, you in or you out?
I'm out. I mean, they're going to be competitive, and I'd like to see that Morris is pulling that team together. I'm a little worried. I thought they were going to try and pull a hook on him. But I'm not a believer in Tampa Bay. You know, I just, you know, chips are falling right for them. I'm just not a believer.
I agree. I think that they don't have the talent of the teams that we've been talking about. And so they've played two really good games, and they should be pleased with where they're at. But I don't think anybody expected Tampa to be barnstorming this year. And most of that, everybody's belief is that they just don't have enough talent yet.
Yeah. I haven't had a chance to see them play yet. From all reports, say the young quarterback, Josh Freeman, is really kind of coming along nicely. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. I'm not buying them. You know, I think they have a nice foundation. They have some really nice young pieces, but they're a very young team. It's going to be interesting to see how they continue to develop, you know. So it'll be interesting to see how they continue to add to this team, and if they can get some veterans in there who can help, you know, the young guys kind of develop those winning habits, then I think they can keep the success going that they're starting this year. But I think this is one of those foundation years where they just kind of take a baby step towards becoming a better team. So I'm a no on them. New Orleans at 2-0. I'll go ahead and kick this one off. I'm all in. You know, chips at the middle of the table. You know, New Orleans is a team that I believe in. If I had to put a team in the Super Bowl out of the NFC, it would be either New Orleans or Green Bay at this point. I'm buying into both of those teams pretty hard. If I had to pick one of the two, I can't right now because I think they both have some flaws, but I think they're both really strong in some areas. The one thing about New Orleans, they depend on the turnover on defense a lot, and they have to show that they can just stop you. They can force you into three and outs. You know, if they can start to do that and show that they can be a three and out producing defense, and they can get off the field without having to get a pick or a fumble, without giving up any points, then that's gonna make them a tough team.
You know, last year New Orleans exploited that turnover, you know, tremendously simply because they scored so many points, and they really haven't gotten off on anybody this year like that. Both of the games that they played early are, you know, fairly low-scoring games for a New Orleans team. And I still think that they have the best offense in football. I think that they have the most talent. Even though Reggie, you know, he's just done. I don't know how you come back from a broken leg. He's got a fracture, but I would be surprised to see him back on the field this year. You know, then that's going to be a huge void to fill because of, you know, of the way that he plays. I mean, he's not I don't call him a running back. I don't really call him a receiver. He just put him on the field and hope to exploit somebody. But I still think that they have the ability to, you know, score every time they get the ball. And I understand you're all in on them because they are a tremendous football team.
Yeah, I think they can
They have so many different weapons. It starts with Breeze. You know, he's elevated to, you know, right now, me, the best quarterback in the game in terms of how he's taking the command of his offense and just leadership. And I think, you know, they learn how to win. You know, they force you. They're kind of like a basketball team that forces you to play their tempo and their style. That's why they're going to continue to get turnovers. Because you're going to always be afraid of not being keeping pace with them. And so even though they haven't played quite with the offense, they just by who they are, they make you press. So I think in a different way than Indianapolis. They just see, you know, Indianapolis is explosive, but if I could play a basketball team, I mean, they like the 80s Lakers. You know, they can go 25-5. You know, just before you know it, you're down 25. It's just that thing. So there's always that threat. And so that's why I think the defense is always going to get turnovers right now, is because I think teams just come in and feel like they got to keep up with them and start pressing. And so I just think they got a great coach. You know, if they can keep that home field advantage, that's going to be a great place to play. Yeah, I'm all in.
Okay. Okay, so we all believe in New Orleans. So last two we got. We got about 5 minutes left, so let's take these two together. We got Green Bay and Chicago. I'm going to throw this one to D. Green Bay and Chicago, which one? Who you got in, who you got out? Not that you have to take one or the other.
Green Bay is in. What I am impressed about is I was wondering how Marks was going to use Olsen. And he's getting them in. He's getting them into the game plan. And Chicago looking better than I thought they would. But I just think Green Bay's got all the pieces. They got the defense coming together. Offensively, they got the weapons. So I'm with Green Bay. I got a feeling that they both might be in, just because I just think they're going to push teams like Minnesota and Dallas. And them. I just think both those teams might be in. But if I had to take a choice, I'm going Green Bay.
Okay.
And I agree with that too, D. I think that I think they both could be in, and I think for completely opposite reasons. I think Green Bay is the kind of team, much like New Orleans, that you know exactly what they're going to do, you know. And if they can shore up that running game, they took a hit with losing Grant, but if Jackson can come up, if he can step up and give them some of that back. Green Bay's not going to surprise you. They're going to come out. They're going to run on the first couple of downs, and they're going to pass. And they're going to, you know, take some shots downfield. They're going to play a lot like they did last year. And a team like Green Bay just looks at you and says, this is what we're going to do, and we just dare you to try to stop it. We think we have the personnel, and we think we have the players that can do that. They're going to start the rookie at tackle this week. I guess Clifton is hurt, and so I mean they you just know exactly what they're, and they have that swagger about them that they really think that they should have played for the Super Bowl last year. They thought that they were, you know, they should have been in last year.
Oh man, that's the outro music there.
Chicago. I like Chicago.
So you got Chicago?
I like Chicago. I think that Mark is going to confuse everybody. Showing that they have some talent that they bought. Mark has complete talent he has.
Okay. I like Chicago to be competitive and compete, but I think in the end, Green Bay's going to win that division. Green Bay's going to make the playoffs. So yeah, so that's how I see it. Like I said, I'm writing all this mess down, and we're gonna revisit this as the season goes along. This is not one of those shows where we make predictions and then don't talk about them ever again. So we're gonna touch base with that. Thank you for listening, Real Sports Guys. Check back in with us next Tuesday, 10 to 12, new 2-hour format. Love to see you there. All right, have a good night, fellas. Y'all want to kick it out to anybody before we roll?
I want to send it out there to them Badgers. We got to do it one more again. And to my hometown Wolverines, keep doing your thing.
Thank you.